Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a special Q&A edition of Sour Graps. I tried to do this last weekend, but the audio cut out, and I'm bad at technology because I'm old. So we're gonna do one now. This will be fun. I'm gonna start with answering all the questions I was supposed to answer last time because those people still deserve it. And then I'm gonna answer all the questions that came through on the Fightful Select. Okay, so first of all, I think I actually answered this one and people hear it, but I'm just gonna say it again. So Nathan Farley asked, besides the last days in WCW, because that's everyone's least favorite, what era would you say was the worst booked? And it's right now. To paraphrase Chevy Chase as Clark Griswold in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell. I think proven out by T-Bar and Mace and Slapnuts. I mean Slapjack. It's right now is the worst booked time. It just really is. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They have the best roster they've ever had and can't figure out what the fuck to do with it. So I'm going to say now, as written by Dev, asked, putting Sasha Banks and Bayley aside, what are some of your favorite feuds in women's wrestling history? And I believe I said that's really hard to put aside because that's the best. It's the best ever. The one that culminated at Takeover Brooklyn, like that, and then finished up with Takeover Respect. Like that's head and shoulders above everything else. It's been dark times in at least the wrestling that I cover on here. To say, you know, what's the best feud in WWE, because there've been really bad eras of wrestling, women's wrestling in WWE. I guess you go back to like Trish and Lita, but that to me, like, that's a completely different era. Like they weren't allowed to do certain things, and this is what they were allowed to do wasn't necessarily that impressive. I think that had those women come up now, they could be something akin to what we're seeing now, but definitely not. Everyone might say Becky and Charlotte, but I feel like they were so hamstrung by wanting Becky to be the heel, obviously wanting Becky to be the heel in that feud, and then panicking to try and figure out how to not do that. I think that there are a lot of really good parts of it, but it didn't quite sit right. And it could have been Becky versus Ronda, but we'll never know because Nia Jax had to go and break Becky's face. That could have been it. Also, they were going to, hey, let's do Ronda versus versus Becky Lynch. Nah, just kidding. Let's throw Charlotte in there too because why not? I don't know. It's Sasha versus Bayley, and then everyone else is somewhere way down there. I mean, sorry to answer it that way, but that's true. T. Scott asks, would love to hear your thoughts on Tessa Blanchard. Her reputation isn't the best, but where do you see her eventually signing, if ever? Which company needs her more? How would you book her on either NXT or AEW? Stay safe and stay sour. Everyone else, stay safe and stay sour. Tessa is damaged goods, man. I mean, I we were talking about this on the Wednesday Night Wars podcast. Like, people asking, like, if the regular, everyday, run-of-the-mill fan even knows that Velveteen Dream has done the things that he is accused of doing. Is accused of doing the things that there appears to be mounting evidence that he did, and yet no investigation was actually done. No, nobody knows this. Nobody's actually aware of this. That's a problem. So, I don't think a lot of people are aware of Tessa Blanchard's stuff, but I think unequivocally AEW needs her more. I mean, you could build the entire division around her. She's phenomenal in the ring and has an amazing presence. And you could do a lot of amazing things with her. And she proved that she can go with the men in Impact. And that's something that is a third rail that WWE will not touch. So you can be as AEW, which again is the second, is a tier below WWE, but I still believe is a tier above Impact in Impact's current state. I think that AEW could show that they're different by using her in that capacity. I don't know that they would, and I don't know that I would book her that way. All I know is she has to be a heel. There's other questions we're going to get in here about Tessa Blanchard, and I'll touch on it later, but I think AEW definitely needs her more. And NXT, the main roster, they have more women than they know what to do with. Brian Cody asks, would you let your daughter become a wrestler? Wendy, you can't. You're asking the wrong guy. My wife would never. And my daughter doesn't know what she sees when she sees that daddy's watching wrestling. She calls him the big guys. Daddy, are you watching the big guys? And I say, yes, daddy's watching the big guys. It's funny. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to it, depending on if like she knew what she was getting into, like understood how hard it was. But that's the same thing as like, I don't know, trying to do ballet or, you know, learning the violin, whatever it is that kids want to get into. It's tough. Now, my wife was into gymnastics when she was a girl, and I think she was like 10, 11. She was doing like a back handspring type thing and landed wrong and like blew out everything in her elbow. Just ruined her elbow. And still can't straighten her arm all the way. And this is something she had did when she was doing gymnastics. So gymnastics is thought of as, hey, that's fine. It's totally cool. Not dangerous, but can be. So can wrestling. I don't think that my daughters would be into it. You know, like she doesn't sit there. Like I know some kids, little kids, like my daughter's age, will sit there and watch wrestling like glued to the TV. My daughter really doesn't care. She's like, daddy, you watching the big guys? And like, yeah, dad's watching the big guys. And then she walks off and plays with her blocks or whatever, or her dollhouse. Cammy at Fat Pierlo on Twitter asks, what is the one moment during your fightful career you wish you had sour graps for but didn't at the time? And this was just so great, is that early in my career in Fightful, I still had an amazing platform. I was reviewing sometimes Raw by Raw alone, and sometimes Raw and SmackDown, and also the pay-per-views. And also, I was writing for the site where I had a semi-regular column where I would be, you know, satirical about stupid stuff in the wrestling world. So the reason that I have sour graps now is because it's just I wasn't able. I don't know if you can tell this. I'm not able to say I'm watching Raw or SmackDown with an open mind, clean slate. Let's just see what they're going to give me, and then I'll react to it. I go in every night expecting it to suck. And that is hard to, like, be, I don't know. Objective is the wrong word because I'm an opinion giver. But to be fair, you know what I mean? That there are people who would want, you know, a little bit more, like, I see what they're trying to go for. I expected this, but I wanted this instead. But that's okay. I don't know if you've seen my work, but that's not my style. And I'm totally grateful to have this platform now, but I had the platform then, and I was able to speak freely on it. There were certainly some major there were several what Sean and I deemed as the night that wrestling died. First of those was Brock Lesnar losing to Goldberg at Survivor Series 2016 in the manner that he did. Yeah, that was a hell of a time. But no, there were plenty of times where I had sour grapes-ish thoughts and was able to express them in varying ways. But yeah, I think that if I had my own show where I could just yell for an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, I think that would have been probably the thing that would have done it. The Brock you built Brock for years and years and years as this unbeatable force. You let him break the Undertaker's streak, and 2 years later he loses in like a minute and a half to a 50-year-old guy who hadn't wrestled in a dozen years. It boggles the mind still to this day. I understand they got a little good feud out of it, and they got they decided to throw the damn title on Goldberg at the expense of Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, which is always going to be a stupid fucking idea. But the WrestleMania match between Goldberg and Brock turned out to be great. Maybe we don't get that at all if we don't have the stupid fucking idea to have Brock lose to Goldberg. But I'm not still bitter about that decision back at the time. As written by Dev, as another question, with news of Melina's potential return, what are some of your thoughts on her initial run with the company? I don't have any. I don't remember. I remember she was part of M&M with Morrison and Nitro. You know, was it Mercury? It was going by, was it Johnny, M&M, Mercury, Nitro? Yeah, was it Johnny Nitro? I forget. M&M. Yeah, that was. I don't have an. He also says, especially the iconic match versus Alicia Fox. I know that's a joke. The thing that Cameron said was her favorite match ever. I don't have any memories of Melina. Like I'm like, I remember she fucking sucked. I'm like, I don't remember. I don't remember a single match that she had. I know that sucks, but I don't. There's a lot of fucking shit in my brain. Like, also, during the time that she was, like, her first run of the company, like, I was doing other stuff. I wasn't covering wrestling as, like, you know, for money. So there are a lot of stuff that I just fucking missed. let's see here. At Best Jobber says, hey, can you ask on 100 episodes of Sour Graps? Thank you. My question is, if you could have dinner with Vince McMahon, what would you serve him? And what would come up in conversation? I don't know if anybody out there has seen the movie Hannibal. Where Hannibal Lecter, played by Anthony Hopkins, is having dinner with the character played by Ray Liotta. And serves him his own brain while he's still alive. That's what I would serve him. And then, you know, whatever he wanted to talk about, I'm willing to talk about in conversation. Seriously, if I could actually talk to Vince, and he'd listen to me, I would say that for the good of your legacy, the good of your company, it is an imperative that you step aside and choose someone far younger than you to take up all creative decisions. That you delineate, here's a team of writers, talented writers, that you say, be creative, work together, figure out a way to dovetail this program with this program. Your scripts and your scripts, talk amongst each other. You have a team of ethnically and gender diverse writers, and you trust them, and you don't get in their way. And all these writers need to be a good 30 years younger than you, ish. 20 to 30 years younger than you at a minimum. It wouldn't hurt you to have, you know, a few writers who are in their mid-20s who understand, you know, the zeitgeist of what's going on in the real world, as opposed to you, a doddering, steroid-addled, brain-deficient monster. I don't know if I would say monster to his face. Yes, I would. I would say monster to his face. I'm going to skip that one because we're going to go back to it later. If you could change three things about WWE, what would they be and why? I don't know. All of them? Distraction. There's a question later about this. I'll get to it, but oh my goodness. So I think that's it for the Twitter ones from before. Now let's start on the Q&A from the actual form on the Patreon on FightfulSelect.com. David Gold asks, favorite triggered rant? There are a few. But the one that really comes to mind, which is why I went back to it earlier this year, when I did a whole segment, like a whole show, just based on the Fightful Funhouse match, Fightful Funhouse, Firefly Funhouse match from WrestleMania. I did a whole show based on it. It's in the archives. You can find it if you haven't seen it. I included and had it edited in there a rant from Mania 2017, which was Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. And I was so thrilled that they decided, let's do it. Let's put that title on Bray Wyatt and make it mean something. And it build to something with that guy, because I still believe he's incredibly talented and he's so much more creative than everybody else he works with. And then they had him try to win the match via projector worms. He uses his dark magical sorcerer powers to conjure up film of bugs on the ring, and he thinks that's going to defeat Randy Orton. And the fact that somebody came up with that, thought it was a good idea, and said, let's do that. And not only, like, let's do that, but let's have it not work. Like, Bray Wyatt uses all of his dark magical powers. This is a fucking horrible feud. Like, Randy Orton set fire, burned to ashes Bray Wyatt's childhood home, apparently with the body of Sister Abigail still in there. And the way Bray got his revenge was via projector worms. I flew off the handle that night. That's probably my favorite one because I couldn't contain myself. But there have been others in the past. But that was my favorite one. Young Bibby has three. Let's do this. Why were you not a fan of Bobby Roode in NXT? To me, he was an excellent heel with a cool gimmick. He's a very good heel. Cool gimmick. Like he wore suits when he wasn't wrestling. He wore a flashy robe. I loved his entrance and the music. Phenomenal. I think you needed to use Bobby Roode to get over a baby face that needed a heel like Bobby Roode to get over. It sounds crazy now, but at the time, there was no bigger fan favorite among Full Sail than Ty Dillinger. I know it's crazy, but it was true. That man was so beloved by NXT crazy fans. from the same area as Bobby Roode. You know, like they had that great easy rivalry there. And I thought it was a perfect opportunity to do something crazy, which was put the title on Ty Dillinger, having him beat a uber heel in Bobby Roode, who everybody hated, but everybody loved Ty Dillinger. If you had, let's say, had Ty Dillinger beat Bobby Roode in Toronto, they had that one thing that was available at the time, it was a Toronto takeover. Like the pop would have still been heard echoing off of the forests of the Great White North. Now, who knows what that would have done? I mean, I personally would have like had Ty Dillinger drop the title a month later. You know, it didn't, like, the whole point wasn't necessarily to have him give him an incredible run. It was just that one moment that would stand forever as that thing that everybody loved in the moment. There's nothing wrong with giving fan service to your best, your biggest fans who love the product. Bobby Roode, like, I don't even remember who he dropped the title to. Like, was it Drew McIntyre? Babyface Drew in NXT wasn't iconic. He's doing a lot better stuff now, and the creative wasn't at its peak with him at that time, and it did feel like it was like, well, we have another guy here, let's take the title off of Bobby Roode, as opposed to like really making it mean something. Because when you have a heel like Bobby Roode, the reason a heel like him exists is to get over a babyface by beating him. And Drew McIntyre was already Drew McIntyre. We didn't need to, like, you weren't getting anybody over by doing that. The feud wasn't personal. There was a cool thing you did with like Roddy Strong back when Roddy Strong was a babyface and Robbie Roode, but that didn't. I felt like Roddy Strong might have been a better choice to take the belt off of him. Ultimately, I don't know. And I didn't really, I mean, I thought he did great work. What I hated was him showing up, after having been a horrible heel, like not horrible, like he was great at it, but like a despicable heel in NXT, showing up on the main roster, like, hey, everybody, look at me. I'm Bobby Roode. Everybody love me, Bobby Roode. Aren't I a great guy? And no, you're not. Like, it was a really weird thing. It was one of those, it was one of the most egregious things of like, this man was a dastardly heel in NXT as the champion. He lost the belt and he shows up on main roster as like the opposite. That's one of the worst ones I've ever done with a call up. I hate it all the time. That was one of the worst ones they ever did. What are your famous favorite horsewomen in order, 1 through 4? One is Sasha Banks. It just is. 2, 3, and 4 is hard. I'll tell you this. Each of them excels beyond the other three at one thing. Like, so with Sasha, it's her in-ring work. Like, all of it. Selling, her innovative offense, the fact she just really amazing transitions into stuff. Facial expressions, all of it, everything. Becky, it's her way that she can connect with the crowd and always has. That's difficult to do, but she's done it. She does it. Charlotte has presence, and you can't teach that. That's just something that you have or you don't. She walks in and she commands everything. I mean, the other three have it too, but Charlotte has it more. And Bayley, I feel like it's, we've seen it. Like, Bayley had the ability when she was in NXT to get you to root for her. Like your life depended on it if she lost. Like, that's how much you were rooting for Bayley. And now, as the heel, who's trying to murder her best friend, she has the ability to do the opposite. I don't think heel Becky ever would have worked, especially turning her heel against Charlotte. Babyface Charlotte does not work. It does not work. You'll never make it work. And babyface Sasha is kind of middle of the road. They don't let her have an edge as a babyface. It doesn't. We'll see how this thing with Bayley goes, because I think Bayley being the worst heel, like the biggest heel possible, can help elevate Sasha as a babyface. We'll see how this feud goes. But to me, each of them have something. They all can do everything well. Each of them has the one area where they excel beyond the other three. So if you're forcing me to actually rank them overall 1 through 4, this is only my personal preference. Sasha, Bayley and Becky might be a tie. And then Charlotte. And that's just my personal preference. Like, I think Charlotte, very certainly according to WWE, but very well might actually be objectively the greatest women's wrestler of all time. And when you rank, when I am forced to rank her among the other three Four Horsewomen, I pick her fourth. I just think she coasts too much on that persona, which again, I say she has an amazing presence, and she does, but sometimes, not all the time, sometimes it feels like she's all persona. That's just my thing. And whether or not the perception is correct, the perception will always be that she gets preferential treatment. And there's a reason that perception exists, whether or not it is true. And I'm not a fan of that. If it's untrue, I'm not a fan of it being, you know, untrue and used against her. I understand. But I think it is true. I think she does get preferential treatment, and I don't love that. I understand it's storyline, but them deciding we have to insert Charlotte into this feud between Becky and Ronda. And oh, by the way, we're also going to take the title off of Asuka to do it. That's never going to sit right with me. Whether or not I'm allowed to actually blame her for it or not. Three, were you a fan of the Ruthless Aggression era? If so, who was your favorite superstar at the time? Kurt Angle? Somebody's going to have to define to me, like, the specific years that was. Kurt Angle, right? Like, I don't know for how much of that he was there, but there was a Batista. I don't know. Like, there's a certain time, and I wasn't, again, that was when I was in like college and grad school, so I didn't have a lot of time to just like sit down and watch hours of WWE programming every week. I wasn't all up on stuff. Like the era right before that, not the Attitude Era, but like that awesome transitional period. I saw every pay-per-view, I think, from 1999 to 2001. But that's the end of the Attitude Era, predating the Ruthless Aggression Era. And that was when I kind of like didn't have that at the budget anymore. You know, like I wasn't going over to hang out with the same guys every month to watch the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I'm going to say Kurt Angle. And was I a fan of it? More than right now. Okay. Jake Schwall asks, what 2020 storyline or result made you the most upset? I'm assuming you mean in wrestling and not in the rest of the world, because there's a lot to choose from there. 2020 storyline result made you the most upset. I mean, over the long term, probably deciding to have Charlotte beat Rhea Ripley in WrestleMania. Like over the long term, that still seems like the dumbest idea ever. They got it. Did it make me the most upset? No. But like, it's just, and I mean, like for a while, the thing they were doing where they were making Retribution obviously a ripoff of Antifa. Now they're like fucking dudes in Bane masks. I don't know what the fuck they're supposed to be. But what, for a while when it was like, ah, Antifa, the bad guys, that made me pretty pissed off. The Sheamus thing, man. Whatever happened to Elias? Because the last time we saw him, he got run over by a car that Sheamus was driving in order to frame another man who he had assaulted in order to steal his keys, to steal his thing, to commit, not even attempted. Like, that was, it only ended up being attempted vehicular manslaughter because he missed him by a hair. That whole thing between Sheamus and Jeff Hardy just still doesn't make any fucking sense. Why hasn't Sheamus done time? Number two from Jake Swall. What does NXT need to do to go back to feeling like the NXT of old? That's a tough one. There's so many little things, man. Like, I mean, Tom Phillips being there, that's a big thing. Vic Joseph basically being, I was going to say mini Tom Phillips, but he's like 6'8". It doesn't feel like the old NXT because there's just too much change. It's never going to feel the same, man. It just isn't. I don't know what you could do. The wrestling still is good, you know, when they actually let them go. But then you book them into stupid things like distraction finishes and you book weird stuff. Like Austin Theory getting his ass handed to him 2 weeks in a row and then looking like he might actually pin the North American champ the next week. Like, that's just bad booking. Like, that doesn't make Austin Theory look like he figured it out. It makes Damian Priest look like a chump. And then that chump beat a guy the previous week who was rewarded for losing to the chump by being put in a gauntlet eliminator match to see if he was worthy to be the champion of the whole deal. There's just too much main roster influence on the storytelling right now. I think if they got rid of all that, but all the people who were writing for it back in the good days, they're all gone. So I don't know what you do about that. Dream match if AEW versus WWE ever did a crossover. Wow. I mean, that's a never going to happen thing, but I don't know, man. For me, it'd be like Kenny Omega versus Who would I put in there? Daniel Bryan? Daniel Bryan versus Kenny Omega. Let's just do that. And let's start there and then we'll figure it out. All right? Sure. Best jobber. Mr. Ollie Davis, number one fan, best jobber in the world, jobber JTJ. One, who is your bet to win the men's and women's Royal Rumbles? Well, women's, it's Sasha Banks, unless they do the match of Hell in a Cell, which they very well could. But if not, it's Sasha Banks, and there's no other option right now. Who should? Well, Rhea Ripley should win it, or Bianca Belair should win it, because those two women need to be like in major, major title programs around WrestleMania time. And as far as men's goes, everyone seems to think Big E, and I wouldn't be opposed to that. I guess we're going to have to see who's holding that belt. You know? If Randy Orton is the champion, I'll tell you this: if Randy Orton is the champion, and there's no reason to think that that's an impossibility. If Randy Orton is the champion on Royal Rumble night, the winner of the Royal Rumble is Edge. That's 100% without a shadow of a doubt. If Edge can compete ever again, that's the shit you're going to do. Because that's a full year of storytelling, which of course they wouldn't do because they suck at storytelling. What am I thinking? It'll probably be Roman Reigns somehow. Are there any fresh or new matches in WWE? Sure, tons. There's not being booked right now. There's not. Like if you told me, it was around a year ago. Around a year ago was when they were doing this ridiculous fucking who tried to murder Roman Reigns with a forklift storyline. But if you told me that out of that, we would get Buddy Murphy versus Roman Reigns and Buddy Murphy versus Daniel Bryan, I would have thought that's impossible. I still think there are guys who were way underutilized, not properly being done. Like, are there any new or fresh matches in the? Sure. Mustafa Ali versus anybody. And I'm sorry to be like the guy who's a stand for my fave, but he's legitimately one of the best in the world at what he does. And they will not do anything with him. There are all kinds of fresh matches out there. They're just not booking them because they don't see the potential of the guys who aren't being booked and stuff. Buddy Murphy's on TV every week, but all he's doing is getting slapped around by Seth Rollins and hitting on 19-year-olds. So maybe, you know, do something else with that guy. Let him actually have real matches versus people. God, I miss the heyday of 205 Live. Jesus, those guys they killed each other in front of 18 people who stayed after SmackDown was done taping. My favorite, I love my guys. MassGamer99 asks, fave AEW match. Well, it's my favorite up until the ending. I didn't love the ending, but the rest of the match was so good, I'm willing to forgive the ending. It's Pac versus Kenny Omega in the Iron Man match, where it ended in a tie and they rang the bell and Pac's like, so now what? And he's looking at the ring announcer and the ring announcer says, now it's sudden death. And Pac's like, what? And he turns around and immediately gets hit with the one-winged angel, whatever it's called. It was so anticlimactic. It's an amazing match, but I did love that fucking match. Pac versus Kenny Omega. Ooh, gosh. I miss Pac. Come back to America. I mean, actually, don't. It's fucking cesspool here. And whole goddamn West Coast is on fire. And all the cops are racist. It sucks. Fave Impact match. We're talking all time? Because you're never going to get me to say anything ever against Daniels versus Styles versus Samoa Joe. It's one of the best matches ever in any promotion. It is the best Impact match in the history of that particular promotion. And it rivals anything from anywhere else I've ever seen, by far. Favorite New Japan match? Well, golly. Am I a shitty, pretend fan if I say it's Kenny Omega versus Okada? Okada? Now I am a shitty fan because I can't remember his fucking name. Ibushi. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, listen, the ones that I actually watched when they were happening live, I fell asleep through because they're on so fucking early. And then I'm afraid that the ones that I actually watched later on tape delay, I was influenced by everybody's interpretation of them, you know? There have been a lot of really good ones recently. And you know, if you want me to go back several years, like you're never going to see me hear me say one solitary syllable of negative feedback for the Styles and Nakamura Wrestle Kingdom match. So, like, is that it? Am I a Styles stan now because I said he had the best? He had the best. Well, I'm going to say something else later about him and how great he is. He's one of the best ever. He had the best TNA match and the best New Japan match I think I've ever seen, both of those. Okay. Well, Dev asks, who would be on your Mount Rushmore of women's wrestling as a whole? Like, of all time? I don't want to be prisoner of the moment. You know what I mean? Like, Asuka's on there because of all stuff she did in Japan before she got here. But then that means I got to take off one of the four horsewomen because they're also... I'm going to have a Mount Rushmore with four, five people on it. It's Asuka and the four horsewomen. And I'm sorry to, like, not put Trish Stratus up there, but, like, I'm sorry. Like, some... Like, they did such awful disservice to the women in that era by, like, Molly Holly, the only way you get on WrestleMania is by allowing yourself to have your head shaved. Lita, we're going to take all of that goodwill that you built by being this really cool part of the Hardy Boys thing. We're going to take all that and throw it away by having you have sex with Edge in the middle of the ring. Trish Stratus, we know you're a great in-ring competitor. Also, here's this dog collar. Wear that. Like, there was a certain time where the women wanted to be something and weren't allowed to be. And then there was a certain time where, like, if the Bella Twins are by far the best workers you got at the time, then you got a problem. So we'll, like... My Mount Rushmore has five people on it. It's the horsewomen and Asuka and the, like, I'm sorry, I'm like such like a guy with like chalk, you know, like that's the obvious answer, but like, I don't know who I'm throwing off of there. There are a lot of great women out there who are doing amazing stuff who aren't in WWE right now. I mean, I'm not going to put the Fabulous Moolah on there. For various reasons. ED, I think that Ed or ED, I'm not sure. It's just space between the E and the D. Who were some of your favorite performers growing up? Well, growing up, I didn't watch wrestling. Like growing up, like as a child, I think my favorite performer was Andre the Giant because I probably watched Princess Bride a million times. And whenever he was on like a talk show or if he was like, you know, on Ripley's Believe It or Not or some shit, like, you know, I'd always find a way to like watch it or something. Andre was definitely one of my favorites when I was a kid. Like looking back, like who I would have loved at the time, I don't think I would have been a Hogan fan, even as a kid. Isn't a little kid, I probably would have been like, that's all bullshit. Eat my vitamins? Say my prayers? What the fuck? I'll bet you're secretly a racist. I really got into watching wrestling as a freshman in college because all the guys in the dorms had it on. Because that was the fall of 97. Like, that's... To me, that's peak Monday Night Wars. We had one TV on in one guy's dorm room watching Raw, and one TV on in the guy's dorm room across the hall watching Nitro. And then we had a little makeshift couple TV trays and pizzas out in the hallway. And we just wander back and forth depending on what was going on. We just walk across the hall like, what's going on over there? It's Undertaker cutting a promo about Kane. And what's going on over there? It's Goldberg beating up some jobber. Okay. So they just like walk across. Like that was it. Like that was how I got into wrestling. I wasn't even into it, but like the guys on my floor at the dorms were like super into it, and I got into it too. And then like after like that was like, again, like between 99 and 2001, I think I saw every pay-per-view. Because we go over to this one guy's house, who's like an older guy who had graduated a couple years before, who knew people, who's a radio DJ in the area. And we'd all pitch in for pizza and kick in some money toward the pay-per-view. We'd watch it every, you know, every month. But like as a child, I wasn't watching wrestling. One of the things I did when the network first came out is I went back and watched a bunch of stuff that I would have watched in middle school or whatever. Like, I think I started, like, doing, like, a rewatch of all the pay-per-views, like, around the first Royal Rumble and then, like, went through it. Wow, man. There's a lot of stuff that they could not have done even close to today that I did not recognize, what I would not recognize as a child. As no. What are your, some of your favorite early wrestling memories? I will say that I did... Somehow, I did not watch wrestling, but there was a cartoon on NBC Saturday mornings. Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, I believe was what it was called. And there was the heels were like the bad guys in the cartoon. And the Hulk Hogan led the good guys. And I wanna actually, because I don't have vivid memories of this, but... Yeah, I want to remember. I want to make sure I'm saying the exact people who were in the show, because here we go. Junkyard Dog was in the show. Hillbilly Jim, Andre, Nikolai Volkov, Iron Sheik, Roddy Piper, Mr. Fuji, Mean Gene, Captain Lou Albano, and I think that's Tito Santana. But they were all like animated versions of themselves. And so like the heels, you know, would do bad things and then Hulk Hogan would have to go over there. The best thing about it though, was that the animated Hulk Hogan had a full head of hair. like he just like, no, I'm not gonna, that doesn't work for me, brother. You can't draw me bald. Give me a full head of hair. So yeah, I used to watch that every Saturday morning for as long as that was on. When was that on? That was on for two seasons, 85 and 86. Yeah. What are some of your favorite angles and storylines? Well, like, that's the thing. Like, again, I wasn't watching for storylines at the time when I was a kid. But from my first experiences, like, the ironic thing about me being so angry at Goldberg for beating Brock Lesnar, like that stupid fucking booking decision, is I was a Goldberg mark in 97. Like, I love that guy. He could do no wrong. I fucking popped for every spear, every jackhammer. When he got the giant, the future Big Show, up into that jackhammer, I lost my shit. I will also always remember when the giant left WCW to go to WWE. They wrote him off in just the best possible way. And I loved it. One random night, it was like the NWO Red and White had merged together recently. And they start out the night with saying there's only room for one giant, one big guy in the NWO. Nash, Kevin Nash, Big Sexy, or the Giant. And the Giant says, there's always going to be, I am the Giant. That's why my name is the Giant. You know, like, you want, like, let's you and me, loser leaves town, basically. So him versus Nash. But of course, because it was Nash, it turns out to basically be him versus Nash and Hall, because it was no disqualification. It was no disqualification. Anyway, I just remember this amazing point where, like, he choke slams Hall out of his boots. And then Nash, like, goes through the middle rope and reaches under. He's like still in the ring. He reaches under the ring and pulls out a wrench the size of a Buick. It's the biggest fucking wrench I've ever seen in my life. Bright red. And the giant walks over to pull him back into the ring, and Nash just swings it up over his head and clocks him in the forehead with his giant wrench and knocks out the giant. And Kevin Nash pins him to win. And then the next time we saw the giant, he was the Big Show, Paul White. That's how you write off a dude off of the show. I thought that was great. Brickbat asks, do you have a pre-show regimen to get yourself sour enough to do the show? Man, I woke up like this, man. Especially right now. I'm so pissed at everything all the time. The world existing as it does is my pre-show regimen. If I didn't have wrestling to get angry at, I'd have broken hands from punching walls, man. What is your favorite match on Raw in the last year? He's got these other ones too. He's got what's your favorite match on SmackDown the last year? And that one to me by far is AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. That fucking thing ruled. To become the new Intercontinental Champion, that fucking thing ruled. What an amazing match on SmackDown that was. My favorite match on Raw in the last year, were there any good ones? I'm honestly asking. Like, the tag match, I guess, a few weeks ago, but like that's prisoner of the moment stuff. The thing with Dominic, and like, again, I think we're all grading Dominic on a curve here. Like, he's really, really good. Be in a match that doesn't involve Seth or Buddy Murphy, and then talk to me. It's so hard because the pre-COVID of 2020 feels like literally 1,000 years ago. And the COVID era has not been good for Raw. I'm struggling to remember a match on Raw that I really loved. Well, again, probably. I mean, I know this was back in like January, wasn't it? Something like, or in January? January, yeah. So that counts. Buddy Murphy versus Aleister Black, the one that Buddy Murphy lost, and then later that night. Maybe I'm remembering them wrong. One of the matches that they had, and this might have been back in December, so I don't know. But I'm going to say Buddy Murphy versus Aleister Black because there wasn't a lot to choose from that was good on Raw. Sorry. Mark Forbes asks, do you think either Seth Rollins or Sami Zayn would be a good leader for Retribution? For Retribution? No. I mean, sure, but no. Seth Rollins has his own shit that he's dealing with. It. I mean, like, I don't know who I don't want to sully with the other one. Seth Rollins is doing Maury Povich bullshit, trying to drive a wedge between the Mysterio family because he's got nothing better to do, which is fucking ridiculous. And Retribution is just a laughing stock right now. Like, literally, everyone backstage is laughing at them. So I don't know which is worse. So no, I wouldn't do that. Sami Zayn, I guess they could move him over, but I don't want Sami Zayn to be the I mean, no. I honestly, like, the guy that I'm hoping for, just because he'd be great on the mic and he'd make you believe it with all this bullshit that he's saying, that they have them say, like, if you actually asked this guy to say the stupid shit they're having Dijak say through the Bane mask, this guy would make it believable. And that guy is Samoa Joe. Doesn't even have to work. So you doesn't have to have matches all the time, but just be the voice, the guy behind Retribution. I don't know why he's involved, because this is... The answer is, Retribution should never appear on television again. I'm sorry. What happened at the most recent Raw made them impossible. It's never going to work. It's just never going to work. That's how badly they screwed this up. Cut your losses. Figure out a way to cut your losses and move on. The best part about it right now is that all of them have appeared as Retribution under a mask. You can have them come back after a few weeks or a few months without the mask and then try and convince us that they were never part of Retribution. The people who were in Retribution died on the way back to their home planet. A la Pucci. It's done. Mark Forbes asks again, which company do you think is worse for the women's division, AEW or WWE? I think it's WWE. Here's the deal. AEW doesn't have a very deep roster. Okay. They could do things with the women that they have, but I understand that they're trying to figure out what to do, how to present the women that they've got, right? And they're doing a really piss poor job of presenting the women that they do have. Meanwhile, WWE has all of the women and can't fucking figure out what to do with any of them. There's just a whole range of terrible booking decisions and they spent months with Liv Morgan off TV, repackaged her. Had her come out with all these vignettes where she's taking a bath, comes out and says, Lana, I am your long-lost lesbian lover. And what happened within a few months? She's back with the Riot Squad. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're incompetent, especially with the women, because they don't have any women writers. And the one they did have was like, my big idea is that Mandy should fall in love with Otis. Which is not a big idea. It's a fat idea, but not a big idea. Knights says, when are you going to start another show for Fightful? I need more Alec, just 2 Sour Graps a week. Well, you could watch the Wednesday Night Wars on Wednesday. Listen, this is Thursday. Thursday is my night off. I'm doing this because I promised it. It was supposed to happen last weekend. Didn't work. I'm doing this on my night off. If I'm not paying attention to what's happening on a show that I have to cover the next night or doing the podcast for that night, like what I get off is Thursday and Sunday, where I can cleanse my mind of wrestling. It's not an impossibility that I might do a second show, a non-Sour Grapsian show. But right now, man, I just like spending time with my family in the evenings. I like putting my daughter to bed, which, to be honest, I do that and then I do the podcasts. But you know what I mean. Frankie Aguilera asks, what was the hardest thing about starting the podcast 2016? I will say that Sean Ross Sapp, credit to him, made it as easy as possible for me. Like, he gave me really great feedback after my first ones, which were not great. But I feel like I adapted pretty quickly to what he was looking for, and was able to use my own personality to make it different. I think that a lot of it was like, I don't want to screw this up. So I was trying not to be myself too much. Because I wanted to be the right guy to do the podcast, because I really wanted to do it for Fightful. I didn't want to like screw it up. So I was tentative for a while. And I allowed, eventually, I was able to just do what I needed to do. And I mean, people responded to it, which I will never be able to thank them enough, and allowed me to still be doing this shit 4 years later. Yeah, a lot of it was just like not second guessing myself in the moment. Also I had to, you know, buy a microphone, which I still use the same microphone 4 years later. So if you're looking for a microphone that for podcasting, that'll last you 4 years at least, get a Blue Snowball. That's a free one for you, Blue Snowball. What are some of your favorite podcast moments? Mine is you guys losing it over the fans chanting "You deserve it" at Roman being flipped over by Braun. Yeah, that's definitely one of them. The night that they did the segment where Braun attacked Roman backstage, and they put him on a stretcher, and then Braun came back and ran the stretcher off the gurney and just flipped it off the loading dock. And it was so obviously there was nothing on it because they had cut so obviously in the editing process. And then they put him in the ambulance and he flipped over the ambulance. And then meanwhile, the entire crowd is chanting, "You deserve it" at Roman Reigns, because, you know, it's March of 2017. It was peak Roman Reigns hate. Not peak, but certainly we're still in it. It was hilarious. That was an amazing podcast to talk about. But I think my favorite one ever was that I said on a post NXT TakeOver that I didn't like the Oscar versus Mickie James match. And I had some quibbles about it and blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of hard on it. And then everyone said that I was really wrong. So I went back and watched it later. But Jeff Hawkins, who was doing the SmackDown podcast at the time, took issue with it and said that I was wrong in a lot of different ways. And so I came on the podcast, the SmackDown podcast, in character and cut a heel promo on Jeff Hawkins out of the blue that Jeff Hawkins did not think was coming. And at the end of it, I said, I got something to tell you. I went back and watched the match and I was totally wrong about it. You were right. And that was a lot of fun. They let me do that. These podcasts, even the ones that I do sitting here in my basement talking to myself, they're so much fun. It's a highlight of my week. Yeah, I love doing them. Frankie Aguilera, third question is, what about NXT? Do you think it's worse now? I didn't really enjoy the WWE Network era 1 hour shows, TBH. Well, I liked those shows more than these shows. A lot of it is just, if the booking feels like it, you know, like, I don't know. It just, maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel like they would have a gauntlet eliminator match where one of the guys in the matches loses because a guy he's starting a feud with runs in and hits his finisher on him and then skedaddles out of the way while the ref's back is turned. That feels like such obvious Vince McMahon booking. Like, it ruins it for me. I want to see wrestlers wrestle. That's what I loved about peak era NXT. I want to see wrestlers wrestle. Anytime you're ruining it with booking decisions and like, let's find a way to get a distraction finish, I don't love those. And that's the problem, I think, as I'm looking for with that. Nate Cummings asks, any advice for someone wanting to follow in your footsteps in regards to satirical wrestling writing? I would say find a forum that like just allows you to write and submit where people can read your stuff, and places where you can get feedback. Build a portfolio. Like write and write again. Keep writing, always write. And then there'll be something like you'll see out there, like I saw, Sean Ross Sapp, a guy I followed from his time in at Wrestling Inc., said, hey, I'm starting a new team at a new website. I'm taking submissions. And I had written a few reviews of Main Event and Superstars for a website called Cage Side Seats that some people know. And they had been kind enough to like just promote those things over there for no money while I was writing the time for them. And I took those things I had written for them and I put the links in an email, sent them to Sean Ross Sapp, and he hired me. And like, I don't think that's the way it's going to work for everybody. It was certainly like lightning striking in the right place. Like, he happened to be starting this website as I was like, I think I would have needed to find a way to make money doing this as I did by writing for Sean. I would have needed to find a way to make money for it pretty quick, or my wife would have thrown me out. Like, I quit my job writing for an internet, like it was a company that wrote copy for businesses' websites. Like, they would, a business would hire this company to design their website. And part of the design of the website was they had a team of writers who would write the copy, the stuff that you would see on the website when you would go to it. Like a landscaping company or a law firm. And you would write stuff, you know. And you'd meet with the client, and the client would tell you what kind of thing they wanted written and thing, and then you figure out, you write it to them, and they'd send it to them, and they send them back, and they make notes, and send them blah, 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 back and forth. And the thing about it is that they wanted you to write for a landscaping company and for a law firm at the same time. And I don't know anything about landscaping, and I don't know anything about law. And so they're like, yeah, well, that's the whole point, is you kind of like just fake it. Like, nobody's gotten to lose clients by faking like you know what the hell you're talking about. And it was like, if you put in the extra work and work hard for your clients and your clients like you, then you get more work, and then you get more work, and then you get more work. And you have to accomplish the more work in the same amount of time. There's no overtime, nothing like that. You could take it home with you if you want, but you're not getting paid for it. But if you do it for do that for 6 months or everything, and the people who work at the company I worked for, the bosses of that company, notice you, then you're going to get a raise. Like, no, this sounds like shit. I don't want to do this. So I quit. And I said I always wanted to write about wrestling. So I figured out a way to start doing that. And literally like 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, I saw the thing from Sean saying, anybody want to write for me? And I said, I want to write for you. Will you let me write for you? And he's like, yes, I will let you write for me. And that's how it happened. And I don't recommend that to anybody. Like, my wife had a decent enough job that I was able to like quit my job and try this thing. And if that didn't work, I was going to have to go back out and try and work for some other fucking company that I hated. I hate working in offices. I hate it. It's I hate it. So yeah. That's how I did that. But again, I don't know if I would give that as advice. My advice is find a place that will let you write for free, where at least you can get it, your thing published online, where people will read it. Writing your own little blog that nobody reads isn't help. It allows you to have like a link of something that you can send to somebody, like, here's something I wrote. But if it's at like, you know, your name at wordpress.com, like, some people might not look at that as a real website. And I understand. It's whatever you can do. That's my thing. Write and write some more and find a place that'll let you publish it. And then when those paying opportunities come along, and they're not often, when they are, at least you'll have something you can immediately say, hey, this is the stuff I've written. Do you like it? Michael Grooms, what is the angriest you have ever been about a WWE booking decision? I mean, angriest personally, I mean, angriest, incredulous. I'm usually like, I can't believe they did this shit. And that turns to anger, but actually angry, like for the person. What they did to Kofi really fucking sucked. What they did to Kofi really fucking sucked. Again, I was angry on behalf of him and all of the people who loved Kofi and for whom Kofi's title reign meant something. They took all that and flushed it down the toilet. I was pissed about that. Yeah. Having him lose to Brock Lesnar in 7 seconds, that pissed me off. Number two from Michael Grooms, what is an independent talent you wish WWE or AEW would pick up? Gosh. Well, independent talent, that doesn't mean that doesn't mean Impact, right? I can't say, hey, there are people on Impact who I wish would be in AEW and WWE, because that's not the same thing. The thing about it is that so many of the independent talent that I remember, because again, there haven't been a lot of shows going on right now, which is how you notice the hot young talent that isn't signed yet, is because you hear about these matches that are going on at small things, you trying to find them on YouTube and stuff like that. But that stuff isn't going on right now in the States, so it's hard to say. I will say there's a guy who used to be on Lucha Underground that I still can't believe hasn't been signed by AEW. And that's the guy who played Mil Muertes, which of course means 1,000 deaths. That guy was fucking awesome. I don't know where he is right now. He's been back to AAA or whatever. He was this guy, 6'2", but in Lucha Underground, that might as well have been 7 feet tall. 260 pounds, but in Lucha Underground, that might as well have been 360 pounds. He was just built like a fucking brick. And he was great at playing that evil powerhouse character. God, he had some amazing matches with Rey Fénix and with Prince Puma, who would later turn out to be Ricochet. Yeah, that guy was great. Still can't believe that AEW didn't sign him. Like, he's so good. Do you remember the first pro wrestling match you ever saw? If so, what was it? Well, I did have a friend when I was like 11 who like had his older brother had some like wrestling VHS tapes and we watched some stuff. And I don't remember what match it was. I remember Jake the Snake Roberts was in it because he had a snake in a bag. And I thought at like 11 years old, that was the coolest fucking thing ever. But I don't remember what match it was. I remember seeing there was a lot of stuff like they would like come on during the afternoon on like a Sunday, and I don't remember what it was, but it was always the ones where like the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase would like wrestle some jobber and beat him and then stuff money in his mouth. Like, it was never on those shows that I would like, they would like be on TV in the afternoon on a Sunday when there was no football or whatever. Those were not the ones where the great matches were happening. Those were the ones where jobbers were getting choked out and then getting money stuffed in their mouths. So I don't necessarily remember the match itself. I remember seeing certain personalities and being like, that guy's interesting. But then like weeks would go by where I wouldn't catch that on TV. So I wasn't like watching things knowing. Like at the time, I had no idea that was a Million Dollar Man. I put two and two together much, much, much later. But yeah, that was I remember that. I don't know if that counts as the answer to your question. Rodolfo Tortolero asks, what is your favorite Shakespeare play? Well, look at that. A non-wrestling question. Yes, I did a lot of Shakespeare all over the country for a while. Now, as written, like just the idea of the words on the page, not an actual production of a play that I've seen, is it's probably Macbeth. I really do love that play. I like a lot of it. And there's other parts that I really enjoy. But like as far as like what I've actually sat in the theater and watched a Shakespeare play is I actually got lucky enough to study abroad in London for a semester when I was in college. I saw a production where they did all of the history plays. That's in this particular rendition, it was Henry the Sixth, Part 1, 2, and 3, and Richard the Third. And that was all like those are all back to back to back to back plays. Like they're all like it's like it's basically like a quadrilogy. And the production of that was like nothing I'd ever seen before or since. Never seen anything like it. It was so good. The way they put everything together and the way they made everything work, it was just brilliant. Loved it. It's at the Young Vic in London in 2001. Yeah, loved it. And it's one of those things like I was watching like, oh yeah, this is why Shakespeare's amazing because it has a capacity for being this. Nathan Farley asks, who do you think is or was the best on the mic? The answer easily is The Rock. He did stuff with a microphone I've never heard anybody else do. As far as like who's the best right now, it's Eddie Kingston, and I don't know if there's anybody else like him. Yeah. MJF's doing some great work in AEW too. He really is, and I can't wait to see where he goes from here. In WWE, there isn't anybody. Sorry, there isn't. They're too overproduced. They don't let them actually do stuff. They're just out there like trying to remember their lines. It's bad. Ben Williams asks, oh, sorry, no. Keith Raymond asks, if you could ban one thing from wrestling, what would it be? Vince McMahon? Is that an answer? Can I ban him from wrestling and then all of the things that he does are also banned with him? Is that possible? Because then there'd be no distraction finishes and no obvious DQ finishes that are set up at the beginning of the match or before. So you know you're watching the entire time knowing there's not going to be a clean finish to this fucking match. That and building a feud by having the challenger pin the champion in a non-title match and then end the feud by having the champion pin the challenger in a title match. Like, can we not do that ever again? Like, all the things that Vince does. So this is Ben Vince. Ben Williams asks, if you could make a perfect roster with a mix of men's, women's and a tag division from any company in any time period, which three would you pick? My God. So one men's superstar. Wow. I hate when they do that. And I just did it. You're brainwashing me. One men's wrestler, one women's wrestler, and one. Now, am I starting a program? Like starting it now? And like I get to sign them to a 10-year contract. And after that, like it's, I don't know. fuck any time period. That's just too much. That's too much. So I'm going to do now. And I'm going to do it the way I say, right? Which is, I get to sign this person to a 10-year deal starting right now. And they don't get to leave. I get to book them the way I want to book them for 10 years. Women's is Rhea Ripley. That's 100%. I won't. Nothing else. She's 23 right now. I get her for her entire prime. I can do anything I want with her. She's that interesting and that good. That's 100% that. Men's is difficult because again, I'm using my own criteria, which is I get them from right now for 10 years, and I can build a whole division around them. And that's difficult because there are a lot of really good young wrestlers, and people that I would have maybe said maybe 6 months ago that I won't say now, because of things, because I don't want that on my roster. But gosh, you know what it's difficult because he's already over 30 now. I can't do it. I want to say Mustafa Ali. I really do. I honestly think he could be one of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling. I really believe that. It's not just me talking up my fave. I really believe that. But he's already over 30. Fuck it. I'm just going to say Mustafa Ali. If not him, then like somebody like MJF, who I know I can get an amazing promo out of every day, and he's so fucking young. He's only going to get better in the ring. So it's like, if it's not Mustafa Ali, the only thing that I'm holding me back is he is on the wrong side of 30. But I really believe he can do anything you ask him to do. He can be such an amazing babyface champion people will want to root for to become champion and then get behind once he is champion. But MJF, man, that guy could cut an amazing promo. And I think that he'd be somebody you could definitely work everything around, because if he ever got injured, he could still cut promos. And as far as the tag team goes, I mean, I know also they're getting up there in age, but I feel like the style that they work, they could work until they're 50, is FTR. Because I really believe you could build everything you would want around them. Jeez, I really do. So yeah, that's my final answer, with apologies to my boy Mustafa. MJF, Rhea Ripley, and FTR. That's who I would sign. If you tell me I can have them from right now for 10 years, those are the people I sign, and I build everything else around that. Ben Williams, second question. I love that you're a real moral dude. Well, thank you. And have clearly struggled not to despise some of WWE decisions and attitudes over the years. So I was curious if you sometimes feel conflicted following NXT, when ultimately it's still under the same backwards talent mistreating MBS associating umbrella. Yes. And up until now, up until recently, I always felt like it's because I have been watching this young talent like strive so much to like achieve their dreams in NXT. It really felt like I was watching these people up and comers, and I could root for them as they were headed towards something greater. But that greater thing they're headed towards is, you know, being put in a fucking Bane mask and being asked to like cut promos about bullshit, or to be called up like Bianca Belair in March and used so sparingly that in mid to late September they do a vignette for you and one of the announcers says, I can't wait to see what she brings on Raw. Bitch, she's been there since fucking March. So yeah, I used to think I was watching NXT, but I was rooting for the people involved. And also, it really felt like for the longest time that Vince wasn't involved in NXT at all. Otherwise, how could some of the things that went on go on there? And now it feels like if he's not actually involved, it's his hand tipping the scales. They're trying to do things that please the top boss. And it's harder and harder and harder to root for all that stuff. Also, it turns out a lot of the guys that I was rooting for in NXT turn out to be fucking scumbags. And that sours you on the whole thing. At least it does for me. Which up-and-coming wrestlers are you most excited about for the future? Well, MJF is one. Rhea Ripley's another one. I don't know if those are considered up and comers, but boy, AEW's got a couple of really great young performers. Like Darby Allin, super young, still great. It's so great. MJF, Jungle Boy, even Sammy Guevara, if he ever get ever his fucking shit together. Like, they're so young, they have so much potential. I'm really excited to see where those guys are in 5 to 10 years. Sean Garner says, when do you think Tessa Blanchard gets signed? I don't know. I have no idea. Sean Garner says, since Melina is back, who do you want to see her feud with? I don't fucking care. I honestly don't. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Mickey James. Wait, who is she back with? She actually get signed? Did I miss that? She said she wasn't. That's the last thing I thought, was she denied all the reports or whatever. Sean's third and final question. Is Liv Morgan or Ruby Riott future women's champions? Sure, why not? All it takes is a little ingenuity and a decide to push them. I still say they could have done something amazing with Liv Morgan when she came back, when she was having, she was like, when, because she left. She left because Charlotte embarrassed her. I says, when I come back, I'm going to be real. And she was cutting promos about how she doesn't even know, I don't even really know what I am or what I'm going, but Liv Morgan is, I'm going to figure out who I am. What? She should have challenged Charlotte Flair and basically refused to be beat. Like, go crazy in the match. Like, never tap out. Just Charlotte hits her, just punches her straight in the face, and she laughs. Like, something nuts. You could do a lot of cool stuff for these people. I love Ruby Riott. I think she's long overdue for a real solid push. But I don't know. Ray Callahan Jr. asks, what do you think about the idea that eventually MJF joins the Dark Order because Brody rewards him with the TNT title on the condition that he can't let Cody have a chance at the title? Sure. I mean, yeah, okay. Is another MJF included idea that I'm curious to get your thoughts on? Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks with Arn versus MJF, FTR, and Hangman with Tully. Blood and guts. Winner gets the right to be called the Four Horsemen. Now you're talking. That's just convoluted enough to be great. I love the idea of Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks. Like, they're the company men, you know? MJF, FTR, and Hangman could be really, really, really great. Sure. Yeah, let's book that now. Let's do it. 3, Bo Dallas has been gone a while, to say the least. Do you think we will ever see him do anything with Bray and The Fiend? If so, what do you think would be a good way to do that? I don't know. I think they've long since passed the time when you could have done something with it. You know what I mean? Like, I honestly thought Bo Dallas should have been in the Wyatt family a while ago, years ago. When Harper or Rowan, when one of the two of them went out, they should have brought Brother Bo in, you know? And, like, maybe he's the guy who eventually takes Bray down because he knows him better than anybody else. They could have done a lot of stuff with that. Still can. I really wanted to see. I've always said I wanted The Fiend to, like, be able to, like, literally hypnotize and brainwash people. Like, why not? Why isn't The Fiend an actual demon? Able to do this. Look what he did to John Cena. He winked him out of existence. could bring Bo Dallas back to have him be his little, you know, servant or whatever. And there's a lot of cool stuff you could do with him. But, yeah, I don't know. Sheila Antonio asked, well, you're asking the wrong person. You're asking any truth to Joey Janela recently speaking out on how badly MLW is running and paying their wrestlers. You are asking the wrong person. I just give the opinions. I have no actual scoops. I think, here's another one from Sheila. I think I heard SRS mention in passing that Mox was interested in wanting Impact and AEW to work together. What do you think of AEW featuring wrestlers from other promotions? I'll do you one better. AEW and Impact should join forces and run super shows. I mean, obviously this isn't going to work because of fucking TV and stuff. But they should. Like, if you combine those two rosters together, that rivals the what WWE can produce. It does. There are enough talented people in Impact who don't get seen because Impact doesn't get watched much. And there are a lot of people in AEW that are really, really great. You could put them together, run super shows. I mean, I'm saying like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I want them to band, join forces, and become one company to rival WWE. I want that, but we're not going to get that. Yeah, AEW should buy Impact and subsume all of their wrestlers and run shows three times a week and bury WWE. Because WWE has lost any... They don't want to be good anymore, or they would be, but they're not. They don't want to be good. They're putting out dreck twice a week. And sometimes three times a week, depending on how bad NXT is. I don't know. Yes, I do think that AEW and Impact would be an amazing partnership in some way to being able to bring in guys from both things and work together. It would be great. Casey Great One asks, how much longer do you think Drew holds the title? Maybe Sunday. I don't know. I think Orton is the guy to take it off of him. I don't know what you do with Drew after that, because I think the guy to take it off of Randy is Edge. I think Edge gets one more run, and he has to beat Randy to do it. Do you think Bayley versus Sasha will be at Hell in a Cell? Maybe. I think it's too early. I hope Bayley's beatdown of Sasha eventually, after maybe a third beatdown, allows her to go away and come back in a surprise entrant. In the Royal Rumble, and she wins it, and she gets Bayley at Mania. That's the way to do it. Because hopefully, God, I don't even know if this is possible, by Mania 2021, we get fans. Like actual living, breathing fans in the audience. And because that's the place where you need to do Sasha and Bayley. 3. Do you think a surprise returning Brock Lesnar could win the Royal Rumble and challenge Reigns again at WrestleMania? You bite your tongue! Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble to get Reigns again at WrestleMania is the dumbest fucking thing they could do. God, no. They're gonna do it, but no. Brian Bayless asked, have you thought about a year-end award show and what you'd name it? No, I haven't. The Grappies? And to go along with the award theme, you're picked for worst WWE feud of 2020. Well, it started in 2019, but it ended in 2020. Blissfully, it ended. Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns. God, that fucking, the dog food match and shit. Just awful. Oh, I know. Viking prophets. That's all to say about that. That was a fucking ridiculous. Zach Barber, what are some of your least favorite gimmicks of all time? Some least favorite gimmick matches of all time. Least favorite gimmicks. I think I said this on the one last weekend, but I don't know if anybody heard it because I don't know if I was muted at the time. Fantasio, I believe, is the name of the mime slash magician who had one match on Raw and was never seen or heard from again. I think his finishing move was like he released doves out of his hat or something. And that blinded somebody so we could like kick him in the balls. I don't remember what it was. It was stupid. That was a bad gimmick. Bastion Booger. Friar Ferguson. Yeah, I did talk about this on the one last week. Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. Some bad stuff. Bastion Booger's entire thing was he's fat and eats a lot. That was his entire thing. Mantar, that was fucking stupid. A lot of the stuff in the early era of Raw was really bad. Least favorite gimmick matches of all time. What was the dog kennel, the kennel from hell match? The one where there were like dogs around the cage and one of them pooped. Wasn't that Al Snow versus Big Boss Man? Bad. Very, very, very bad. That's one of the worst. Punjabi prison match is fucking awful. That's a bad one. Which wrestlers would you like to have a drink with? Well, I'm going to say get a burger with, because I don't drink anymore. I don't know. That's tough. Sami Zayn. I'd like to go out and have and to get their choice of food, because I'm not really sure. But yeah, I want to go out, the three of us, me, Sami Zayn, Mustafa Ali, and I'd like to pick their brains about how they view the world and how they view working for, like, and actually get honest answers from them, obviously off the record, but like, I just want to talk to them about how they feel working for this company. For a man who is, who financially and with his heart and mind also supports one of the worst regimes in the history of this country, like wholeheartedly, and how awful that regime is to the people who are like Mustafa Ali and Sami Zayn. I just love to go and sit and talk with them. Like, honestly, just have a meal and a frank discussion about what it is like to work for this company. And also their views on the whole world, because it'd be nice to like have a sounding board for people who have to live under the umbrella of the WWE and this McMahon. All right. We're down to like the final five-ish. Jay Kane asks, how would the addition of James Storm and Bobby Roode to NXT help them compete with AEW? Also, the possibility of adding Tessa Blanchard. Well, I mean, is Bobby Roode, is his contract up? I know he's hanging out in Canada, last I heard. If his contract's up and you can get beer money as beer money to show up in AEW, that's a thing. Oh, I see. James Storm coming to NXT with Bobby Roode. I mean, beer money would obviously be like the number one tag team in NXT right now, unfortunately, because I love Breezango, but it's true. Tessa Blanchard, I don't need to see her in NXT. I don't know. Well, there's a lot of Tessa questions here. I'm going to kind of put them together because is it possible that James Storm or Tessa Blanchard appears as a surprise in an NXT TakeOver? I mean, sure, it's always a possibility they could sign somebody and have them, you know, sitting in the crowd in the crowd, in Full Sail, possible. And then Anakin JMT asks, where should Tessa Blanchard go? I still say AEW. And if it's WWE, should she go to NXT or straight to main roster in a feud with Charlotte? Well, if she goes to WWE, I don't want her NXT right now. Just muddies all the waters down there for people like Rhea and Io. And I still say there's a lot of unfinished business they have with Candice and Tegan Knox down there. I think they're both future NXT Women's Champions. I think Rhea Ripley's going to be NXT champion, Women's Champion again at some point. I don't want to see Tessa down there. And your suggestion of her feuding with Charlotte, which while it makes sense because of their dads, that means one of them has to be a babyface. And as we've discussed, Charlotte can't be a babyface. It doesn't work. And also, you can't book Tessa as a babyface. You just can't, ever. Wherever she goes, you're not allowed to book her as a babyface. She can be like a badass tweener, but you can't make her somebody that some people actively root for. It'd be really hard to do a feud between her and Charlotte where one of them isn't the person that you root for. And Charlotte is, she cannot be at that. You cannot root for her. It's not possible to root for Charlotte. You can appreciate all the shit she does without rooting for her. And Tessa, I just can't. You have to think about signing Tessa, what that does to your locker room. Because all the people who work at either AEW or NXT, they all know the people who work at Impact. They've talked to them. They know these people. They've all worked together in different capacities. They're friendly. They know all the shit that Tessa said and did behind the scenes that made her fucking hated in that locker room. So what you're saying is, we think this person and the amount of money we can make off them is more important than everybody we currently have under contract because of the baggage she brings in. Some women in the locker rooms may be able to overlook that because, like, hey, she brings in money. That's good for me too. And that's fine. You can be professional about it in that way, in that robotic kind of way. Or you can have a big fucking problem with somebody who has that kind of baggage coming and working for you. Jay Kane has one final question. Besides moving to a larger venue, can NXT compete with a loaded roster AEW has? Evidently, no. Like, they lost by a good number in viewership. And they always lose the demo. I don't know. There's a really, really, really bad viewership number for NXT last night. And they had a gauntlet eliminator match and a women's number one contender battle royal and other stuff to promote. It's not doing it. And the thing is that it's really cool that you put the title on Finn, but he's not appearing on your program. Finn Balor is a bona fide superstar. Not like in the WWE superstar sense. He's a bona fide megastar. He really is. Like, whether or not you book him as such, he is one. Now you put the title on him. Fucking use him to bring in some people to watch. He's interesting. It's weird. Yeah, larger venue, I don't know. I honestly don't know how that works for them. It still feels weird that they're in Full Sail what everybody else is in the Thunderdome, considering that WWE has access to the Thunderdome all the time now. Final question. An hour and 45 minutes into this thing. I've loved being able to interact with you guys this way. Honestly, I have. I'm going to do another one of these later. I don't know when. It won't be next week, I promise you that. Anakin JMT asks, I'm going back and watching old episodes of NXT starting right when they first aired episodes as the new developmental brand in 2012. Any episodes you remember for their importance, and when do you think NXT was at its best? The first question, the answer to that is whenever they did title transfers. Because it was like... Big E, right, took it off of Seth Rollins. And then Bo Dallas took it off of Big E. And Bo Dallas held onto it for the longest fucking time. So he lost it to Neville, I think. And then Neville lost it to Sami Zayn, right? And then Sami to Kevin Owens. And by that point, you're like, we're off to the races here. Because when Kevin Owens showed up on Raw and basically spit in the face of John Cena, NXT had arrived. You know what I mean? They don't have that takeover arrival, you know? That's, they had arrived. When Kevin Owens showed up and said, basically, John Cena, you're a bitch. And then beat him in his first match against him. That was big. That was huge. So, yeah, those being able to chart the growth of NXT via their champions, very interesting. The one to watch, obviously, and then I think this doesn't count as an actual episode because I'm pretty sure it was on a takeover, but Sami Zayn versus Cesaro is one of the greatest matches of all time. Yeah, that's amazing. When do I think NXT was at its best? That's a tough one, but like around the time I started working for Fightful, that was when you had Gargano and Ciampa in a tag team together as DIY. The Revival was there. American Alpha was there. That was when tag team wrestling in NXT was so good. The top of the card wasn't super strong, but everybody underneath was really hungry and great, and the women's division was excellent. Yeah, it's tough. Like, the absolute era, I think, was like 2016 to 2018. Like, that was my favorite time, like, where, like, you knew every takeover was going to be fucking fire. And it always was. And even the episodes, they would just say, because, like, obviously, working in this business and wrestling media, you always knew what was happening because you'd follow the spoilers when they taped the episodes. But still, you got to actually watch the match, and it would always be like just out of this world good. It was when it's because all those guys were so hungry to prove something. God, it was so great. And then so many of them got called up and done nothing with. I mean, Retribution, like, would have a point if they weren't like a silly, ridiculous fucking gimmick. Like, if it was actually Dio Madden and Shane Thorne and not Mace and Slapjack, Shane Thorne talking about how he blew out his knee for that company and they rewarded him by when he came back, his tag partner had been let go and they just turned him into a jobber. Like, he sacrificed a year of his life working as hard as he could and blew out his knee and came back and they did nothing for him. And Dio Madden said, I was down there for years. They never put me on TV. They turned me into a goddamn commentator before they would ever put me into a match. Look at the size of me. What could be wrong? But guys my size, Vince, like, drools over. Why am I not in matches? What's going on? Give me a shot, at least. I mean, Donovan Dijak has a little less of a quibble. But if you actually got guys out there who had been mistreated, like, the actual guy who should be the leader of Retribution is EC3. Obviously, he's not in the company anymore, but that would have been an amazing guy to be the... Him talking, giving all the promos, being that, like, being pissed. Like, you called me up for what? So I could play a mute? When you realize all these guys get called up, and if they don't get injured and released, they get used and abused and forgotten about. I mean, Ricochet's having matches on Main Event. Fucking Ricochet, man. There was a time when a person being called up from NXT really meant something. Like, it was like they had plans for you. I really do believe that. It's just not the case now. They're just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic. And that's it. That's the whole Q&A sesh. Thank you so much, guys, for responding and sending all these questions in. I had a lot of fun reading them and answering them. I hope everybody, had a good time. I had a good time talking. This is good. I love all you guys. Stay safe out there. It's bad. It's a bad time. I hope we all get through this together. But yeah, thank you for supporting us, me, through 100 episodes. It means a lot. Again, because I'm always a shill, you can get this Sour Graps t-shirt at shop.fightful.com to celebrate 102 episodes now of Sour Graps. It's been a lot of fun. Here's to another 102 more. This has been Sour Graps, and I've been Alex Pawlowski, and everything sucks.